Call this meeting of the House Resources Committee to order. Today is Friday, March 30th. The time is 2:34 p.m. Members present at this time, Representative Chris Birch, Representative Justin Parrish, Representative Harriet Drummond, Vice Chair Representative John Lincoln, Co-Chair Representative Andy Josephson, and myself, Representative Tarr. Please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to conduct business. Assisting us today is our recording secretary, Debbie Tillinghast, and our LIO moderator, Max Stanley. Thank you both so much for your patience also with our late commencement of this meeting. If we could please ask folks to turn their cell phone off, we'd appreciate that. I think for anybody watching or listening in, I know Representative Tallarico has an excused absence, and a couple of other folks I think are maybe possibly in transit or trying to get back to family for the holiday weekend, so that may be why you don't see them here. We did have three items on the agenda today, but given that we have about 25 minutes, we're just going to take up one item, House Bill 331, the Tax Credit Certificate Bond Corporation Royalties. This is the first hearing for this bill, so that'll situate us to be able to take action on the bill next week. It's scheduled both next Wednesday and next Friday. House Bill 288, we introduced that earlier this session, and members were given the new committee substitute as well as a new presentation to go with that committee substitute. So I hope folks will get an opportunity to take a look over that. We'll bring that item back up on Monday. And then House Bill 399, we'll bring that back up on Monday. So if we could ask members to please be prepared for a potential evening meeting on Monday, because we'd like to kind of clear the deck and get caught up on all the items that are outstanding. And the early meeting for that day has three or four of them, and depending on how quickly we can move, we may be okay, but we may need to do the evening meeting. So without taking any more time, so we can get to House Bill 331, that's the status of things. Please let us know if you have any questions. And at this time, if we could ask Mr. Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner, and Mr. Ken Alpert, the Tax Division Director, to come forward and put yourself on the record.
Madam Chair, for the record, Ken Alpert, Tax Division Director, Department of Revenue. Deputy Commissioner Barnhill, I believe, is on his way. There was a little bit rapid notice of the start of this meeting after your floor session ended a few minutes ago. I expect him to be here. While I'm apologizing, I will apologize for the error in the title slide of the presentation before you. This was presented by Commissioner Fisher to Commonwealth North last week, and in cleaning it up a little and changing it for this committee presentation, I neglected to replace Commonwealth North with House Resources Committee. The responsibility for that is mine, and I apologize.
I think you're probably forgiven, I think.
So, before we get to the bill itself, just to lay the groundwork a little bit, as you know, this committee had a strong role in passing House Bill 111 last year. That ended Alaska's system of cashable tax credits. They are, however, still a substantial amount of them still on the books at some point, needing to either be used by taxpayers to offset taxes, sold to other taxpayers, or purchased by the state pending funding. That number, which is discussed later in this presentation, is a little over $800 million, plus there's another roughly $150 million that we expect to come in or are in process before the final tax credits that are eligible for cash repurchase are sunset. So, and in this environment, we're looking at a recession in Alaska. Private sector jobs are down, and part of the reason we are here with this bill is to give a boost to Alaska's economy. And it is a component, I should further contextualize, of the governor's, Deputy Commissioner Bonham, thank you.
Welcome.
Of the governor's stimulus package that was introduced at the beginning of session. I wasn't sure if you wanted to make some opening comments before I got into the actual. Sure enough,
my breath, sorry.
Thank you for rushing over. Apologies for our delayed start.
So Alaska has lost a lot of jobs since the price of oil started going down in the later months of 2014. The private sector jobs are estimated to be down about 3.8%. This is data from our Department of Labor, or about 9,200 jobs. The oil and gas sector has taken a disproportionate hit of that. Unsurprisingly, oil and gas industry jobs are down over 30%. In 2018, ICER, that's the University of Alaska at Anchorage's economic research arm, forecasts an additional small drop, but a small drop does not indicate a recovery. It just indicates sort of a leveling out. So what this bill, House Bill 331, is intended to do is to provide a boost of funding to help resolve some of the uncertainty in the oil and gas industry relating to the states not fully paying the tax credits that had been earned in the manner that they had been paid for several years previously. That uncertainty leads to issues of credit, issues of companies being unable to plan their next round of investment. So what this bill would do is put about $700 million plus or minus into the economy within the next year to the oil and gas sector and resolve that, uncertainty hanging over the sector. I see one more typo on this slide. Really, I'm having a bad day. Enabling companies to plan seeks to unfreeze Alaska credit markets. How did that get through? A lot of the companies who've received these credits and borrowed money under the expectation of prompt state repurchase are now suddenly delinquent in their loans and are finding themselves unable to borrow additional money, in many cases the money they need to complete an active oil and gas development project. So we hope to incentivize new spending in Alaska, again, $700 million or more, and the jobs that would be associated with that, all improvements to the overall economy as we go through this difficult transitional period. So the bill that we have, and I'm looking at my boss to my left, wondering if you wanted to chime in.
Sure. Madam Chair, Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Revenue. I ran over here, so I'm a little out of breath, but wanted to say thanks on behalf of Commissioner Fisher for the committee's hearing of this bill today. Very, very much appreciated. So I'll step through the next few slides, and then Ken will pick up with the details of the bill. And we recognize that time is constrained today, so we'll go as quickly as we can.
And just pardon me before you begin, recognize Representative Johnson has joined us. Please continue. And there may be questions, and we'll try to do them at the end of each slide, and hopefully we can run over maybe to 3:05 before Labor and Commerce will need to come in.
So as the committee knows, the legislature resolved one issue with respect to the oil and gas tax credits last session by sunsetting the tax credit program. But that left still the issue of what to do with outstanding tax credits. And it's been a bit of a conundrum, quite frankly. As everyone knows, the state is under severe fiscal pressures. The amount of the outstanding tax credits is somewhere between $700 and $1 billion, $700 million, $1 billion. And so how do we take care of this issue at the same time as care for the state's fiscal constraints? This bill is an attempt to balance, if you will, competing interests through a financing. So we owe X hundred million dollars. We can't afford to tap into our state savings accounts to pay all of that today. So in an effort to balance those conflicting interests, we're proposing to borrow that and pay off the borrowing through debt service over time. One of the things we want to introduce into this conversation and the need for resolving this now is the fact that this tax credit program was calculated to attract investment into the state by new and small oil and gas exploration companies. And we actively marketed that. Our department actively went out. We went to other states with presentations that we sought to get the interest of oil and gas companies. And we brought Mr. Moose with us. And we did slideshows, and we told folks that we hoped to get their interest to partner with the state of Alaska in developing its oil and gas resources, both in the Cook Inlet region as well as on the North Slope, that if they came and did certain things, the state of Alaska would partner with them, and Mr. Moose would come out and provide cash. You do this, Mr. Moose will give you cash. You do this, Mr. Moose will come and give you cash. And we had a slideshow. We went to Houston, and we played this slideshow. And everything that Joe the Explorer did, Mr. Moose came out and handed him cash. And the reason why we tell this story is we want to introduce the concept of reliance. And for the attorneys in the room, this is an important legal concept. When the state does things and it attracts investment on the part of private entities, and they come to Alaska and they do certain things, and reliance on Mr. Moose providing cash, we need to recognize that. And we also need to bear in mind that while we want to avoid litigation at all costs, that if this were to end up in the courts would pay some attention to what the state, what the Department of Revenue did in trying to attract investment from outside entities. I do believe, you know, as this thing goes on, we'll hear more about Mr. Moose and what Mr. Moose did and why people came, because they thought the state was going to be standing right next to the new small oil and gas explorers, and we would invest side by side with them with cash. And of course, as we know, that happened for a while, price went down, and we had to start restraining the amount we spent.
Deputy Commissioner, I have a question. In that advertising, and it would be great if we actually could just see that video at some point.
We'd love to show
it. How, you know, this program was created with the statute that says how the repayment program will work based on the different, you know, whether the price of oil, you know, the difference. And how was that advertised to companies? Because I guess it's hard for me to believe that companies would not ask and look at sort of the read between the lines here, if you will, about, you know, okay, we're saying this, but, you know, what are the details? How does it actually work? It seems to me that if I were a company, I'd have an entire legal team who would review this and understand, you know, the potential for pitfalls. I guess it just seems unlikely that they wouldn't have also known that there was a statutory formula about how the repayment would take place.
Madam Chair, we would be happy to show the slideshow. And I believe we still have folks working for the Department of Revenue that participated in those presentations. If you go back several years, you may recall that going back to, say, 2010 in the Cook Inlet region, there was anxiety about brownouts, about not having sufficient gas to generate electricity for the majority of Alaska's population. I think there was considerable enthusiasm within our department, within the capital, within the Rail Belt region for this program. And I think that enthusiasm, more likely than not, boiled over into the marketing that we did for it. Obviously, I wasn't in the legal departments of the companies that came. I have no idea what due diligence they did or didn't do. But the fact is they did come. And the fact is we did pay a considerable amount of money when credits were tendered. And we did that for some period of time. And then the oil price bottomed out, and then we stopped doing that. So there's statements that we made. There's actions that we did, and the only point I'm trying to make is I think those statements and those actions will be weighed along with the statutory language that was enacted in determining how this would get resolved. But again, we don't want to go to the courts. Nobody wants to go to the courts. We want to resolve this, but in the event we can't, I think Mr. Moose is going to be relevant. We're just trying to make sure that the committee is aware of the existence of Mr. Moose and the enthusiasm by which the state marketed this program.
Thank you.
If I could add just a personal observation on that, because that statutory formula language found its way in 2007 and was largely forgotten. For the most part, from talking to many legislators, most or all were unaware of its existence. Most of us at Revenue didn't remember that it was there I wasn't there in 2007, and that 8 consecutive years of budgets completely ignored it. Language was written into the budget every year to simply fully fund the amount of credits that were requested, and it wasn't until we came into a fiscal crisis and realized that we most likely couldn't afford to do that anymore that we became aware of the language we already had that governed how we were supposed to have been paying for these things all along. And thus we reverted to it.
Thank you. I guess for me it's just sort of trying to understand. We hear a lot about risk and assuming risk and how project evaluation is undertaken by companies. And pardon me, it just seems to me as part of that risk assessment, you know, that you'd look over the statute with a fine-tooth comb and recognize that the potential existed for, you know, the payment schedule to follow the statute rather than be above it. So that's just something I'm trying to sort of tease out and understand better. Pardon me, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And through the chair, if you and I were to enter into a contract which said, you know, if you give me $100, I'll give you, you know, a dollar back. Or if you come to my store and you buy $100 worth of stuff, I'll give you a coupon for up to, what was it, $65 off of your next purchase. Very generous, but it'll draw more people into the store, right? Now, if a previous manager of my store, whom I've since helped to fire, made a habit of buying those coupons back at full face value as people were leaving the store, does that obligate me to continue with that anti-market practice?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, interesting hypothetical and somewhat legal situation. We can't answer that question today. Ultimately, a court would have to weigh in and answer that question. What we're trying to do is give you a flavor of various factors courts would weigh in evaluating that. But one thing, we'll just kind of stepping back from it and using your hypothetical. You know, if you're a business and you make representations to the public and then you suddenly change those representations or you change your practice, you can't expect, I think reasonably, that your customers may be frustrated with that sudden change of practice. The reputation that your store has in the business community and with your customer base for doing things a standard way and continuing to do those and the stability of that practice is important. And going to this slide, maintaining state credibility is a similar concept. I think that when the state goes out into the public and makes certain representations and then for whatever reason starts to back away from those, that the state's credibility can be eroded as a result. And you know, one thing I think the Walker administration wants to emphasize here is that we are in a recession. We recognize that. We would like to be doing things to stimulate the economy and get us out of that recession. And one way to do that, of course, is to set up the state's business arrangement so that we're viewed as a credible, stable, good place to invest. Come to Alaska. This is a stable economic climate. We want your investment dollars. We want companies to return to Alaska to invest not only in the oil and gas sector, but all sectors. And so it's kind of getting at those perception issues in both your hypothetical as well as the reality of the situation.
Follow-up?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Just a statement at this point. I would rather be recognized as a state that honors contracts and honors statute rather than being a state which honors the word of Mr. Moose. And I'm profoundly dissatisfied that previous administration should have put us on the hook and put Mr. Moose's good name at risk.
Representative Birch.
Madam Chair, you know, we've been hanging out for months wait for this thing to roll up in front of us. Like the governor presented it some time back. This is a huge issue. It talks about state credibility. It's a huge issue. I would like if we could roll through this presentation and
Representative Birch, I'm the chair of this committee, and I will run the committee as I see fit, and I will allow you to ask questions. Everyone is an equal member of this committee. Everyone will have an opportunity to ask questions. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to have continued conversation about how I run the meeting.
My question?
You have a question?
Yes. Are you still planning on wrapping this up at 3:05 as stated at the outset?
Yes, we are.
Okay. I would just encourage the chair to let these gentlemen roll. Thank you.
We're going to continue, as I said, where we'll take questions after each slide. We have this on the calendar on next Wednesday and next Friday. Please continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we recognize that time is constrained today, and we'll do everything we can to get through this quickly. We also offer to every member of the committee the opportunity to meet with us individually, and we can take offline all of your questions. So we want to make sure that we address both the committee's needs as well as members' needs. I'm going to go quickly through this. This is a, a chronological timeline of oil and gas tax credits. We don't need to belabor that at the moment. And this is just making the point that oil and gas tax credits have, in many ways, achieved their purposes. Were there better ways to do it? Undoubtedly there were. Did it cost a lot of money? No question it did. But in particular with respect to the gas shortages in the Rail Belt region, problem was recognized. This tax credit program was created to address that problem, and largely that problem has been solved. So we just want to make that point. And then on the bottom part of the page, the tax credits have indeed succeeded in bringing new small oil and gas explorers to the state to create the opportunity for new development, new production. And, you know, ideally the hope was that through investment of the state of Alaska through the tax credit program, it would create a virtuous cycle where the state would invest its own dollars in development and exploration of new fields, which will generate new royalties, new production taxes, which will go to pay all of the state programs that are necessary and important for your constituents and for the people of the state of Alaska, and ultimately contribute additional dollars to the permanent fund. And so it's, you know, trying to keep the focus on continuing to put inputs into that virtuous cycle of new investment, new production that we want folks to know about. And there's some examples of fields that are under development we hope will produce more jobs, more revenue in the future.
Any questions on this slide? Please continue.
This slide gives the background of state purchase tax credits through this year. $3.6 billion in total cash purchases. Those investments of state dollars have produced real production, real historic production, real production going into the future. We're definitely excited about that. We want to see those numbers increase as we go into time, but at least through the end of 2016, it's 175 million barrels of oil that have been produced to date, and that production will continue. That production will continue to generate royalties and some taxes going into the future. So right now we have a balance going to the bottom of the page of $807 million. Of that $807 million of unpaid tax credits, 500 and some is from the North Slope. Close to 300 is not from the North Slope. And so that's what we're looking at today.
Commissioner, or Deputy Commissioner, before you go off of that slide, I just wanted to try and match up the numbers on slide two. You had said provide $700 million or more in economic stimulus in 2018, and then you thought there were $150 million more to still come in, but then this one is 807. So how can we combine those numbers, please?
Madam Chair, Ken Alper here. And we haven't gotten to the mechanics of the bill before us, but should the $807 million be offered into the bonding program should the bill pass and everyone, all the owners' certificates participate, it would be about $700 million or so that we would be paying for them, $750 somewhere in that range. So that's the initial investment, reinvestment to the economy we described in the earlier slide. The 130 to 180 is in addition to the 807, the credits that haven't been issued yet. And the way the bill is structured and the way the bonding is envisioned, there would be a second and third round of bonds issued a year or two later for these smaller remnant amounts, and that would, at the time they were sold, add yet additional funds to the economy.
Thank you very much. Any questions on this slide? Okay, please continue.
This slide gives forecasted production for the fields that have been financed with State Alaska
investments through the tax credit program. So we're expecting 106 million barrels from currently producing fields on the North Slope, an additional 23 million barrels from fields not yet producing. So that would bring the number from the previous slide with this to 215 million barrels financed by the tax credits. Cook Inlet, as I indicated earlier, is now got a large amount of gas to meet the needs of the people in the Rail Belt region, estimating 90 billion cubic feet per year, or 15 million barrels of oil equivalent of future gas production. Total past and future production in the Cook Inlet region, close to 300 million barrels of oil equivalent.
Representative Parrish has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and through the Chair. How much of that production would have taken place in the absence of the credit program?
Through the Chair, Representative Parrish, that's a good question. My understanding is prior to the tax credit program with respect to Cook Inlet exploration, there wasn't really any plan for additional exploration in the Cook Inlet region. My recollection from the time was that there was serious concern about brownouts and whatnot. So,
actually, I meant on the North Slope.
Oh, North Slope, Mr. Alper.
Through the Chair, Representative Parrish, we honestly don't know. There's always been a certain exploratory interest. Part of the perception in the industry about the North Slope was that it was somewhat controlled by three large companies. In part of the program, one of the intangible parts was to help draw new blood to the oil patch, because it was generally understood that the oil that remained to be found out there was not elephant fields, but were fields in the 25 to 100 million barrel size, say something like that, that's simply too small for the BPs of the world to invest their time and effort in seeking. So, and those companies, not I hate naming a name, but the large companies that were already here do large things. They're big international companies. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to get new companies up here. There are certain barriers to entry. It's an isolated location. You've got transportation issues. You've got logistical issues. So these credits were in some ways intended to ease the path into Alaska for these new entities who then went forth and discovered these small and medium size, and luckily in a couple of cases they might actually have found a couple of fairly large oil fields. What would have happened in the absence of any credits? It's hard to say. It's also, and I have to say this, a lot of these credits are operating loss credits. And in the context of Alaska's transition from a gross-based tax to a net profits-based tax in 2006, the companies who are producing and selling oil for profit, every dollar they spend, more or less, comes off their bottom line and therefore reduces their tax burden. The company that comes up here and is spending money but doesn't have production yet does not get an immediate tax value for spending that money. There's lots of different ways to do it. The way that was established last year with the House Bill 111 is that they get to carry that forward and hold it until they come into production. That is worth less, given the time value of money, than getting paid for it now. So a lot of these credits that we've paid, we're really taking losses and monetizing them in real time rather than forcing the company to wait a certain number of years. So did that make it easier for certain companies to enter Alaska? My sense is, in public testimony, you will hear that it did. How much would or would not have happened without them, I think it's impossible to say for sure.
Any follow-up, Representative Parrish?
No, thank you.
Before you continue, I just want to say we checked with Labor and Commerce, and we can go till 3:10.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
So on this slide, we go to what's brought us to this bill, to this committee today. So between the years of FY08 to FY2015, the state paid all the tax credits in the year that they were presented. And beginning in FY16, we were unable to do that. The governor vetoed the tax credits in two successive years. And then following that, the tax credits were paid pursuant to a statutory calculation. The bottom of the slide sets out the statute, the statutory formula. So when the projected price by the Department of Revenue is $60 or higher, The statutory formula is computed as 10% of the gross tax levied under AS 4355 production tax. When it's less than $60, it's 15% of the gross tax as levied by the Department of Revenue under AS 4355. When the bill was introduced, the price that from the fall, the department's fall forecast was less than $60, so we were using the 15%. 2 weeks ago, we adjusted that price in the spring forecast to over $60, and therefore we shifted that calculation to the 10%. And on this next slide, we can see the estimated updated schedule of statutory payments. So when we first introduced the bill, the number in the FY19 box was $206 million. Because we went from the 15% formula under $60 to the 10% formula over $60, the number went down from 206 to 184.
Representative Birch.
Yeah, was there some interpretation of that that through the chair that made that number significantly smaller? I just recall that maybe it was in a finance committee meeting or something, or there's some permutation on how the calculation worked.
It's actually a slide back from where we're talking.
So through the chair, Representative Birch, the way the statute reads is the tax under 011, and we've interpreted that to mean the tax 35% of the net profits is the tax calculation under 011. From that number, a typical taxpayer producing on the North Slope will subtract the per barrel credit, which is in 4355.024, not in 011. So for the purpose of applying this formula, we've 10 or 15% of that, what Deputy Commissioner Barnhill called the gross amount under it. That is not absolutely explicit in the statute. There is most definitely ambiguity in that statute, and others have interpreted it to say the amount of revenue actually received under 011, which would be the net of that tax calculation minus the credits. So the number that came out of the Finance Committee and currently is in the operating budget before the House is $49 million. That reflects the net-based mechanism to make the same calculation.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Mr. Albert, I was just having this throat issue here. Pardon me. It's largely the per-barrel credit that's the difference in the calculation.
Madam Chair, it's almost entirely the per-barrel credit that's the difference. And the per-barrel credit is a little bit of an odd duck because it increases as the price of oil goes down, but then it decreases as the price of oil continues to get low as you get into a minimum tax environment to where at very low prices, $40 a barrel, say, there no per-barrel credits at all are used. So what's happened is the price of oil has crept up from the 50s and into the 60s. The ability of companies to use that per-barrel credit has increased. They've come closer to being able to claim almost the entire $8 per barrel allowed in statute. What that's done effectively is create a wider gap between the two plausible ways of making this calculation. If we were having this conversation last year or the year before, the difference between the two numbers might have been $20 million and it wouldn't have been quite so controversial. This year we're looking at a delta in the $130, $140 million range.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It sounds like the two ways to calculate are a percentage of either the tax that they're hypothetically paying or the tax that they're actually paying. And the difference is pretty enormous. Why are we erring on the side which costs the state more money?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, we are continuing with our past practice. We have been For as long as we've been looking at this issue, which is back to 2015, we've been making this calculation under the assumption it was a certain way. We didn't contemplate that it was going to be controversial or that the gap between the numbers would grow so large, but we are simply being consistent in our own interpretation. I believe from the point of view of industry, they have recalibrated their thinking around the expectation that Alaska will be funding at the statutory number. they were initially disappointed and probably a little shocked that the funding wasn't complete and full, but everyone's come to recognize that the state's fiscal picture is limited, that something less than complete needs to happen. But the last 2 years have been funded at the statutory number based on the formula described in slide number 8. Now suddenly they're expecting that. I think there's some anxiety that if we then revisit that theoretical formula, that might lead to additional anxiety, uncertainty, dislocation within the industry.
Follow-up? Representative Harris? No? Representative Birch?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it fair to say that the administration supports a historical interpretation of the appropriation?
Yes, through the chair.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, obviously, it makes a big difference, so thank you.
Mm-hmm. Please continue.
And if I may say, Madam Chair, when we get to the nuts and bolts of the bill, and we're not going to get to a sectional analysis today, in the future when I do, you will see that the bill has to contain a mechanism by which you project what a company would have received if we appropriated at the statutory formula so as to be able to calculate the buyout that we're offering them. That theoretical payment stream presumes the higher appropriation schedule that Representative Birch is referring to.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go, like, take every last second we can squeeze in here, so please continue.
So, Madam Chair, this slide 9 shows the statutory schedule as the department interprets the statute as revised by the spring oil forecast. So this year we would appropriate 184. In lieu of an appropriation of $184 million, the governor's budget has an amount sufficient to pay debt service under this bill. I guess we can conclude with the impact of reducing payments from the total amount of tax credits presented in any 1 year to this statutory schedule, which is higher than the alternative statutory schedule that's been presented, has been material within the North Slope. Exploration and development in some cases has been halted. We've reached out to many all of the large the businesses that have large amounts of tax credit. We've reached out and spoken with banks that have provided financing to these companies. Banks are not lending into the oil and gas sector in Alaska at present because of this issue, and so one of the primary purposes of this bill is, again, to create some economic stimulus, to unfreeze credit markets, and to restore some normalcy to the oil and gas sector in Alaska.
And we are just about out of time. Could we go to slide 10 and at least get the basic concept of this out, and then we'll pick up when we have the bill at back?
Madam Chair, thank you for that indulgence. So conceptually, what we're talking about is discounting to offer to buy these credits back at less than face value. And the mechanism by which this is done is to say, when would the company expect to get paid given their pro rata share of the annual statutory formula? And then based on that schedule, depending on how far out in the schedule it is, the discount steps in. So if you look at the chart on the right, let's presume for a minute Company X has $100 million in credits, that if the appropriation were made, their share would be to receive $25 million per year over 4 years. So over a four-year period, they would get $100 million. What's $100 million worth today if we're offering to cash you out today? So and there's two different discount rates. When we get into the mechanics of the bill, we'll describe how you get from one to the other. But the more aggressive discount rate, which is worth less to the taxpayer, is 10%. Now, the first year's money is undiscounted because they would be getting it anyway under the normal appropriation mechanism. So that 25 is worth 25. The second year is 25 million, has 1 year's delay built into it, so it's divided by the discount rate, essentially divided by 1 plus 10%. And that second 25 is really worth $22.72, or $22.73 million, excuse me. 2 years later, in FY21, you would divide again by 1 plus 10%, and the third year's worth of money is $20.66 million, and likewise, the fourth year's money is worth $18.78 million. So we would make a lump sum offer to that company of $87.17 million for all of their credits, which they would have they could say no, but we would need to know that in advance, obviously, before we go to Wall Street and borrow the money.
If that company were able to meet one of the criteria to earn the lower discount rate, which is estimated at 5.1%, but will be determined closer to the final date of borrowing, that same mechanism, that same formula worked through the 4 years would lead to us offering them a hair under $93 million. So from the point of view of the taxpayer, in exchange for what they would give to get to that lower rate, they would get another $5.7 million or so.
Thank you. Okay. The earlier PowerPoint I had seen for this bill was about 6 slides, so this has gotten quite a little more involved. So I apologize that I was not anticipating we would run out of time. That's why we thought it would be good to try with the half hour now, about 45 minutes, and still not enough. So, again, this bill's on the calendar for next Wednesday. We have ING, one of the banks involved in this, in town that day. They'll be able to testify in front of the committee. So we'll do the invited and public testimony next Wednesday, as well as finish up with this presentation. And then, again, we'll have it back before the committee for potential action on Friday. Thank you so much for being flexible. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner, for running over here. We really appreciate it. Everyone have a really lovely Easter weekend. Hope you have some nice time with your family. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Madam.
We're adjourned.